When I first began the study of 1 Samuel, which I'm supposed to be wrapping up 2 Samuel at this time, I emphasized that what I wanted to do was study the lives of individuals instead of giving you a history lesson, to emphasize the conduct of individuals and how that conduct related related to their relationship to God. But we've only got a couple of more weeks, so what I'm going to try doing is wrapping up 1 Samuel, hopefully, and then get to the beginning of David's reign. I think that's a very interesting period of time. If you turn to the last few verses of 1 Samuel chapter 26, this is the second time that David has spared Saul's life. And in verse 21, Saul acknowledges, "I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly." The trouble is, he's going to continue to play the fool and he's going to continue to err exceedingly. But it comes down to verse 25. "Then Saul said to David, 'Blessed be you, my son David. You shall both do mightily and shall prevail.' And with this, David went his way and Saul returned to his place." But in the first verse of chapter 27, David said in his heart, "I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than I should go to the land of the Philistines, and Saul will despair of me and seek me anymore in all the borders of Israel. So I will escape from his hands." With this, he and the 600 men that are with him, their wives and their children, go down to Gath, and Achish is the king there, and Achish gives them Ziklag to live in. And if you look at verse 7, it says, "And the number of the days that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was a full year and 4 months," which, by the way, go back up just a few verses. When Saul was told that David has now gone to the Philistines, it says he sought him no more. And so this continued pursuit on Saul's part has now ceased. David has now gone to dwell among the Philistines. As we come to chapter 28, it says, "It came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their hosts together for warfare against Israel. And Achish, the king of Gath, the mayor of the city, Achish said unto David, 'Know assuredly that you shall go with me and the host of your men.'" Very briefly, to emphasize where we are, I hope I can point it out. All right. Ziph is right there. And Ziklag, there it is right there. There's Ziklag. And so David has gone from Ziph down to Ziklag, and that's where he's living. Now we find that the Philistines have assembled themselves at Aphek. That's right up here. Later they're going to go up and they're going to be at Shunem, and then they're going to go down to Shunem is going to be up there. There's Shunem, and then they're going to go down to Jezreel. And this is where the war or the battle is going to take place. In the second verse of chapter 28, Achish said he wants David and his men to be his bodyguards. This gives us some indication of the relationship that existed between David and Achish. Achish felt perfectly safe to be in the presence of David and to have David watch over him. As the Philistine soldiers, like I say, they've gathered together Achish, and Aphek. And all the Philistine soldiers are marching by. The five lords of the Philistines are there. And they see David and his men. If you look at, chapter 29 is the one that I want. In verse 2, all the lords of the Philistines passed by the hundreds and by the thousands. And David and his men passed in the back with Achish. And when the princes of the Philistines saw these Hebrews here, and Achish said unto, they asked, what is they doing here? Achish came to his defense, and they said, David has got to return. And one reason being, in verse 4, the princes of the Philistines were angry with him, and the princes of the Philistines said unto him, make this man return, that he may go back to his place, where you have appointed him, and let him not go down to battle with us, lest in the battle he become an adversary to us. And wherewith should this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord? Should it not be at the head of these men? This has happened once before to the Philistines, going back to 1 Samuel chapter 14. I believe it's around verse 47, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it's verse 21. Where the Israelites were fighting against the Philistines at Michmash, and they were overpowering the Philistines, and the Hebrews that were in the Philistine army turned against the Philistines and fought with the children of Israel. Well, that lesson has not soon been forgotten, because they're afraid now David could seek no better way to ingratiate himself to the leaders of the nation of Israel than to turn against the Philistines in the battle against them. And so he's been sent back. And you come down to verse 11. It said, 29 verse 11. So David rose early, he and his men, to depart in the morning to return into the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel. Now, the thing that's interesting in this, if you go back, you find, first of all, that Saul was at Jezreel in, Saul was dead. I've forgotten where it is now, where it said that Saul was at Jezreel, but the Philistines, then they come to Jezreel. And Saul then retreats to Mount Gilboa. This is a picture of Mount Gilboa. This then is where Saul and his three sons died. And you can see that the fertile land at the base of the mountain, actually the whole valley is this way. We look at Nebraska and Kansas as being the breadbasket of the United States. Well, this valley of Jezreel, or the valley of Israelin, was the breadbasket of the children of Israel. This again is a picture of Mount Gilboa. But the thing that's interesting, if you come way over here, this is Endor, where Saul is going to go to the witch. Shunem is up there. The Philistines go from Aphek up here to Shunem. Then they come down to Jezreel. Jezreel is where Saul was to begin with. Saul then has retreated to the defensive position of Mount Gilboa, and that's then where the battle will pursue. And of course, you can look. There's a good defensive position for them. Coming to anything on chapter 28 and 29, we're going to come back to chapter 28 because this is where Saul goes to the witch of Endor, but going to wait on that to deal with it chronologically. But I know I've gone through this very rapidly, but any thought, any comment on this before we get to chapter 30? All right, if you turn to 1 Samuel chapter 30, we see it's taken David 3 days to get back to Ziklag. Once more, they've been up here at Aphek, right? There's where my hand quit shaking, where Aphek is, and they come down here to Ziklag, and it takes them 3 days, the first verse. And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had made a raid upon the south, upon Ziklag, and had smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire. Now, this gives us some insight to the character and the behavior of the Amalekites, because at this time, the Philistine army has left them and gone north. The army of Israel has left this region, and they've gone north, so the Philistines and the Israelites are up there. That leaves this region down here unguarded and unprotected. And so the Amalekites take advantage of that, and they raid the land. If you go over to verse 16, it's mentioned the first of the chapter that they've raided Ziklag, but not only Ziklag. After David comes and finds them, when it brought him down, behold, they were spread abroad over all the ground, sitting and drinking and dancing, because of all the great spoil they had taken out of the hand of the Philistines and the land of Judah. So the Israelites weren't the only ones that the Amalekites had attacked, but they also attacked the Philistines and had gained themselves great plunder. Going back very quickly to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 25, beginning with verse 17, as the children of Israel now are on the east side of the Jordan River, they can look across the Jordan and see the land that has been promised to them. Moses gives the law to them a second time. And on this occasion, he reminds them of something that happened 40 years earlier. Deuteronomy 25, verse 17. Remember what Amalek did unto you by the way as you came forth out of the land of Egypt, how he met you by the way and smote the backside of you that were feeble, that were behind you, those that were faint and weary, and he feared not God. And so instead of attacking the main body of the children of Israel or the front where there might be soldiers to defend them, they attacked the rear of the children of Israel, where those that were feeble, those that were weary, and so forth were. And these are the ones they attacked. That's characteristic of the Amalekites. Now the southern land is undefended, and so the Amalekites once again decide that they're going to attack them. Coming back now to 1 Samuel chapter 30, David and his 600 men have returned from Aphek. They see the city of Ziklag destroyed. And the men, if you note verse 4, then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. And talks about David's two wives were taken. Verse 6 says that David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of the people was grieved, every man for his sons, every man for his daughter. Oftentimes, even in our day and time, when people become grieved and upset, distressed, they don't think logically, they don't think reasonably, they think emotionally. And so we see that David and his men are all weeping to where they're not able to weep anymore. The 600 men are so upset, they're wanting to take David's life. But there's something very interesting. If you note in the latter part of verse 6, but David strengthened himself in Jehovah his God. David, in the following verse, asked Abiathar, the priest that's with him, to inquire of Jehovah. And verse 8 said, and David inquired of Jehovah. There's two points in this. In time of great grief, time of great turmoil in their lives, everyone is upset and distressed, David puts his trust in Jehovah. And before David acts or does anything, David inquires of Jehovah. We're going to have tragedies, and we're going to have difficulties and disappointments and things in our lives that's going to upset us. But what we need to do in such situations as this, be like David, David strengthened himself in Jehovah his God. In our times of sorrow, grief, distress, we need to strengthen ourselves in the hand of God and then inquire of Jehovah as to what is the right thing for us to do or the response. God says that you should go ahead and pursue after the Amalekites. On the verse 11, they found in the field an Egyptian, and he hadn't had anything to eat or drink in 3 days, and so they gave him something to eat. And in verse, the last phrase in verse 13 says, "My master left me because 3 days ago I fell sick." Again, I think this gives us some indication of the character, the value, the behavior of the Amalekites. The fella has his slave, but the slave is sick. He's no more use to me, benefit, so just leave him behind in the desert. David asked then, "Would you help us pursue after the Amalekites?" He agrees that he'll do this. This is why in verse 16, it says, "When he brought him," that is, when the Egyptian brought David, "behold, the people were eating and drinking over the land." And verse 17 says that David smote them from twilight even to the evening of the next day. Gives you some idea of how long the battle took place. And it says, none of them escaped except 400 men that had camels, and they fled. One of the things I forgot to mention in this, as David is pursuing them, remember they've traveled 3 days from Aphek to get back to Ziklag. And now the people are emotionally distressed. They've wept till they couldn't weep anymore. And so as the 600 start off after the Amalekites, 200 of the men just unable to go any further. So really when David pursues and attacks the Amalekites, he does so with just 400 men. And so David smites the Amalekites, and he does a very interesting thing. If you note verse 26 through verse 31. And when David came to Ziklag, he sent of the spoil unto the elders of Judah, even to his friends, saying, "Behold a present for you of the spoil of the enemies of Jehovah." What David does is he solidifies his relationship with the tribe of Judah. Because we're going to get to the first chapter in 2 Samuel, and Judah comes and makes him king. But he doesn't keep the spoil for himself, but he sends part of the spoil back to the people that have been plundered by the Amalekites. As this is taking place, we now come back to the war with the Philistines. The Philistines have gone from Aphek to Shunem, and from Shunem then they have gone on to Jezreel. Look at the three verses I want to call to your attention. The first one is in chapter 29, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together all their hosts at Aphek. That's where they started. And Israel encamped, there it is. Israel was encamped at Jezreel. So the Philistines are way down to the southwest at Aphek. Saul and his army are at Jezreel. But if you look at chapter 28, verse 4 now, going back, even though it's historically afterward, the Philistines gathered themselves together and encamped in Shunem. And Saul gathered Israel together, and they encamped on Mount Gilboa. They were at Jezreel. But as the Philistines approach, they come to Shunem, which is in the middle of the Jezreel Valley. Then Saul retreats and goes to Mount Gilboa. And then, of course, we've already noted chapter 29 and verse 11, where it says, where David arose early and left, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So they've gone from Aphek to Shunem. Now they're at Jezreel, where Saul was originally. But Saul has retreated to Mount Gilboa. Once again, I've covered this territory rather quickly, but any thought, any comment, any question before we proceed? Kurt.
I noticed that, you know, David stopped to help this man who was a former slave of the Amalekites, the Egyptian. And, you know, here David is, the next king of Israel, and he stops to help a slave. And it shows where his heart is. His heart isn't in his position or his future position, but his heart is on the man and helping him. And it reminds me of that one parable, the Good Samaritan.
Oh, okay, yeah. And, the Gospel of Luke.
Yeah. And, you know, even though the Samaritan wasn't the next king of Israel, but his heart was in the right place where he helped a stranger. And when they say, you know, after God's own heart, well, that's what David was, you know.
And that's an interesting point, because once more, these little events and incidences give us an insight into the character of David and the men that are with him. I want to go back now, and we'll slow down now, to chapter 28. Now, we've skipped from chapter 27 to chapter 29, and even to chapter 30, and now come back to chapter 28. The reason being, historically speaking, chapter 28 occurs the night before the children of Israel fight against the Amalekites. Not the Amalekites, I should say, before they fight the Philistines. And this is where we have the account of Saul with the witch of Endor. And look at verse 3 now of chapter 28, where Samuel was dead. So he died back in chapter 27. Saul can no more go to him and consult with him and ask him and plead with his or for his help. But he's dead, and all Israel lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. Evidently, this is something that Saul did early in his reign, because he's get later in his reign, like I say, he just comes unhinged. He has this evil spirit, this spirit of melancholy, this spirit of depression. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. And so this is the disposition that he has later on in his life. And so in verse 5 of chapter 28, when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid and his heart trembled greatly. Coming back again to the situation, the location. Saul is up here on Mount Gilboa. The Philistines have come from Shunem over here to Jezreel here. And so from there he can see them. But a very interesting thing, anyway, in my thinking, is the fact that Saul is afraid. Go back, if you would, to 1 Samuel chapter 14. This is after the children of Israel have defeated the Philistines. And in verse 47, now when Saul had taken the kingdom over Israel, he fought against his enemies on every side, against Moab, against the children of Ammon, against Edom, against the kings of Zobah, and against the Philistines. And wherever he turned his hand, he put them to the worst. But his mental state, his relationship with God, has deteriorated so badly that now, instead of putting the enemy to the worst and being a good, brave leader, he is now trembling because of the state and the relationship he's in. And one of the reasons that he's trembling, if you look at verse 6, and when Saul inquired of Jehovah, Jehovah answered him not, neither by dream, nor by Urim, or by prophets. This is a shame. And I think this is a lesson that we need to recognize in our lives today. Saul lived his life in such a way and conducted himself in such a way that he separated himself completely from God. 1 John chapter 1 verse 5 says, if we say we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. For God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. There is a clear distinction between light and darkness. And Saul, what I guess is the term from Star Wars, has gone over to the dark side. Saul has abandoned God in his conduct. And so God has now abandoned him. And so as we look at our lives, our values, our priorities, our conduct, our goals, by such are we separating ourselves from God so that God will not respond to us because we have gone out from the presence of God. One of the things we need to do is we need to keep examining our lives and looking at our lives so as to ensure that we have the right relationship with God. In verse 7 and verse 8 then, says, you know, when he inquired of Jehovah and God just ceased to answer him. There was no relationship, no union, no contact. So Saul said to his servants, seek me a woman that has a familiar spirit, that is, one that is a medium, one that can conjure up the dead so that they can communicate with them. And so he says, find a woman that has a familiar spirit so that I may go to her, inquire of her. What a contrast. He's lived his life in such a way that he cannot inquire of Jehovah. Remember David when he went to Ziklag in chapter 30 and all the devastation where he strengthened himself in Jehovah, his God. And then the next verse says he inquired of Jehovah. He lived his life in such a way that he could. And so now Saul is in such straits that he can no longer go to God. And again, I keep emphasizing, we ourselves in our day and in our time need to live our lives like David did and not like Saul. He could have, but he evidently is so hardened and steeped in his way after years of searching for David and acknowledging David's going to be king and acknowledging that he's played the fool. He still continued to do that. Yes, if one repents, they can come back in relationship and fellowship or union with God. But Saul has not done that. Carry on.
Rulers in our times, like Saddam Hussein, you know, he found him in a hole and he didn't want to give up his power, you know, even though he was done. So he wanted to hold on to that power, but, you know, he just couldn't. So I think Saul's in the same mindset that he just didn't want to give up that power that control.
He was so hardened, so callous that he's beyond reclamation. But coming back to our text then, we see in verse 7, that he's going to inquire of her. He can no longer inquire of God. And so he turns to one that he had despised and opposed earlier in his reign. And they said, behold, there's a woman that has a familiar spirit at Endor. As I suggest, up here, there it is Endor. Saul then comes from the mountain. The Philistines are encamped there. Saul comes out all the way across the valley and comes to Endor that he might be able to inquire of this woman who claims to be a medium. In verse 7 and verse 8, where Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, went he and the two men with him, came by night and says, divine, that is, as a medium, draw up to me. by your familiar spirit, and bring me whomsoever I ask of you. And the woman said of him, behold, you know what Saul has done. He's gotten rid of all those familiar spirits and wizards, and you're just setting a trap for me. And Saul, in verse 10, swears that he swears by Jehovah, saying, as Jehovah lives, there shall not anything happen to you. So the woman asked in verse 11, who shall I bring up unto you? And he said, Samuel. In his desperation, remember now, he's lost his will to fight. And so in his desperation, when years past he's been able to turn to Samuel, he calls for Samuel once again. Another interesting point. We've already emphasized the fact that Jehovah God would not respond to him, would not answer. He separated himself so far from God. But in whose name does he swear? In the name of Jehovah. And again, I think this helps to emphasize the hypocrisy, the mindset he doesn't realize what he's doing. But in this, he asks that he would bring up Samuel. And then in verse 12, the woman does so. Now, there's two points in this. Number one, did the woman actually have the power to bring Samuel back from the dead? Or was this an act of God? As I understand the text, it's an act of God, because notice what the woman does in verse 12. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. Now, she's used her chicanery and her sleight of hand and her tricks in the past to imitate the fact that she's been able to bring somebody back. But this time she succeeds. And it scares her to death, the fact that here is Samuel. And the second point, as we read the text, the question is, was this actually Samuel? Let's go back to chapter 15 and verse 35. This is after Saul has returned from the battle against the Amalekites. He's supposed to destroy everything. He doesn't do it. And so Samuel tells Saul that God is going to take the kingdom from him and give it to one that is more worthy than him. And in verse 34 of 1 Samuel chapter 15, then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. For Samuel mourned for Saul, and Jehovah repented that he had made Saul king over Israel. It's stated in 1 Kings chapter 15, verse 35, that Samuel saw Saul on the day of his death. And so, yes, number one, I believe God did allow Samuel to return. The woman didn't do it because she was surprised when Samuel appeared. And was it just an apparition? Was it just a dream? No, it says Samuel saw Saul. Any thought, any comment on that? Anybody else have? All right, we'll continue then in our text. Samuel, in verse 15, asked, why have you disquieted me to bring me up? And Saul answered, I am sore distressed. Remember going back to chapter 14, verse 47, where he always put the enemy to the worst? But now he's deteriorated in his mind so badly that when he sees the army of the Philistines, he's not courageous like he was in the past. But he says, I am sore distressed. And he says, and God has departed from me, and he answers me no more by either prophet or by dreams. Therefore, I have called you, that you may make known to me what I shall do. And then the response of Samuel in verse 16. Wherefore have you asked me, seeing Jehovah has departed from you and has become your adversary? And then dropping down to verse 19, he says, tomorrow you and your sons shall be with me. So he's told Saul, you're going to die in this battle. With this, then, we're going to come back to chapter 31 with the war against the Philistines itself. But once more, any comment, any thought, any question? All right, let's go back now to chapter 31. As I suggest, chapter 28 occurs on the eve of chapter 31. What we read in chapter 29 and what we've read in chapter 30 are things that have occurred earlier. And now we come to the actual, the battle against the Philistines. The Philistines prevail against the children of Israel. And in verse 2 through verse 4, the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan. This is the most regrettable thing that occurs in this text, because we have seen the spirit, the attitude that Jonathan had, and now Jonathan is dead. The Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul, and the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers overtook him, that is, the archers found him, and he is greatly distressed by reason of the archers. Then said Saul to his armor bearer, draw your sword, and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took his sword and fell on it. I want to very quickly turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 1. This is where the Amalekite comes to David, and he tells David about the defeat of the children of Israel and the death of Saul. And so he says to him, you know, how do you know, in verse 5, how do you know that Saul and Jonathan are dead? And the young man said unto him in verse 6, as I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul was leaning on a spear. And lo, the chariots and the horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called, and I answered, here am I. And he asked in verse 8, who are you? He says, I'm an Amalekite. And in verse 9, he said to me, stand, I pray you, beside me, and you slay me. For anguish has taken hold of me, because my life is yet whole within me. So, in verse 10, the Amalekite said, I stood beside him and slew him, because I was sure that he would not live after he had fallen, and I took the crown and his bracelet and brought it to you. We have two accounts of Saul's death. 1 Samuel chapter 31 says that he fell on his own sword. Now, the account we have in 2 Samuel chapter 1 is that the Amalekite took his life. Now, the question is, do we have a contradiction in the Bible, or which account is correct? Anybody? All right. 1 Samuel chapter 31 is the inspired historical account of the death of Saul. What we have in 2 Samuel chapter 1 is an Amalekite who is wanting to ingratiate himself to David. Saul has been his enemy for years. Saul has pursued him for years. And so he comes to David and says, I have killed your enemy. I have killed the one that has pursued you. And I've gotten his crown and I got his bracelet and I brought it to you. The thing is, the individual lied. What we have in 2 Samuel chapter 1 is not an inspired historical account, but we have an account of an opportunist who wants to say that he has saved saved David from his enemies. All right, before the other classes get in here, any thought, any comment? All right, what I want to do then, next Wednesday evening we have a gospel meeting, but the final Wednesday, look at the first few years of the reign of David as he reigns in Hebron. I thank you for your time and your attention this evening.